Hi, this is Lou Covey with Crucial Tech, and I've got my partner in crime, Patrick Bulch from Cyber Protection Magazine, and one of my favorite interview subjects, Pano Yannakogiorgos, who is a professor of cybersecurity at New York University. We've talked to Pano in the multiple times in the past, and it seems like it's an absolutely crucial time to get to understand what the capabilities are and what the possibilities are in cyber warfare going forward. And that's why we decided to give Pano a call. This morning, NBC News reported that President Biden was presented with a cyber attack option to disrupt Russian military options. And they've come back and said, no, that never happened. But then there was another report came out that Anonymous has come back into the news and launched a DDoS cyber attack on RT, the Russian government sponsored television broadcast organization. And they hit it with 100 million devices. And it seems like something is happening in the cyber world. And Pano, I think maybe the first question I'd like to ask you is, does the US and NATO have the capability to actually shut down the Russian internet?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me, Lou and Patrick, for hosting. So the short answer is it's complicated. So shutting down the entire internet to Russia would be very hard unless
you maybe not shutting down the entire internet, but actually causing panic in the or havoc in the infrastructure and military.
Yeah, so on the U.S. side, we've been investing billions of dollars into U.S. Cyber Command. And one of their mission areas, it's very publicly acknowledged, it's even within their own doctrine, is to do offensive cyber operations. If the U.S. did not have the capability to do that, and I were in Congress, I might go knock on the door of Cyber Command and ask, what have you been doing with our billions of dollars of investment if you're not developing the option for our leaders to use a capability to cause some sort of disruptive cyber effect in Russia. So the caveat there is, assuming we do have that kind of capability to cause disruption to specific sectors of the Russian economy, it really comes down to the question of what are our political decision makers willing to do with that capability? And when I saw the NBC report, at least, it's a tough bind because let's say we do use a cyber capability to disrupt Russian military infrastructure. How will Putin and the Russian military perceive that kind of activity? Will they see it as a direct US engagement with the Russian military, which would then open up the Pandora's box of Putin following through with his threat on Tuesday or Wednesday for retaliating with something we've never seen before, right? So even though we might have the capabilities to cause massive disruption, the kind of stuff that, you know, is, even though we have that capability, may not, there may be no political desire at this moment in time to use it.
Okay. I've been in contact, in the course of becoming a cybersecurity journalist, I've made a lot of acquaintances with people in the hacker community, white hat, gray hat, and black hat. And I've been in contact with them over the past couple of days about this. And I put a very simple question to them. It says, how likely is it that the people in your group are going to launch a unilateral, unsanctioned cyber attack on Russia during this time? And all three of the groups that I talked to, their leadership responded with a one-word response, quote unquote, very. So we may not actually need the governments to step forward, because it looks like the hacker community, especially in light of what happened with Anonymous and RT, is already underway. And as what I've heard in recent reports in the past 24 hours is that Russia has triggered their geofences to keep those attacks at a minimum, if not stop them altogether. But when I heard that, I was thinking, doesn't that also mean if their geofences are up, that nothing can come in, but nothing can go out also?
And then maybe just to add to that question, even if those actions from the hacker groups are not sanctioned by the government, wouldn't it be possible, or isn't there a risk that President Putin will actually acknowledge that as an enemy act upon their territory, even though it's not officially sanctioned?
Yeah, these are both great questions. So I'll start with whatever can get into the Russian internet can, with the geofences, if those are up, can anything go in or out and that kind of stuff. So technically, I'm not exactly sure how the geofences work at a technical layer, but assuming that the reporting is accurate and that over the past decade, really, the Russians have developed their own internal internet capability to ensure that critical functions that rely on the internet could continue to operate even after there's been a geofence, after Russia disconnects from the global internet. The impact on internal Russian services would likely be minimal as a result of all that infrastructure having been built out over the past decade, as Russia has anticipated needing to shut out the global internet to prevent, or not even to, not to prevent, to raise the cost of an attacker to actually conduct cyber attacks within Russia. So if you can't get into Russia easily through the global internet because a geofence has been shut, stood up, the cost it would take to then conduct something in Russia would increase because you'd need somebody behind the Russian internet or a capability behind the Russian internet to produce the effect you're seeking to produce, if that makes sense. So it's true, things cannot go out, but obviously with VPNs and all this other technical capability, there are ways in and out through whatever kind of great firewall or Russian geofence paradigm you're seeking. So
essentially you're saying that even though Russia has prepared themselves for this kind of a situation, they are not completely defensible.
Correct. Not completely defensible, but it does increase the cost to whoever's trying to create mischief. So yeah. I'll give you an example to kind of link it together with the hacker community. So let's assume the hacker community has developed botnets and everything within Russia, and all the command and control infrastructure for those botnets are reliant on having global access to the domain name system. If the geofence goes up, those hackers who might have the aspiration to cause a DDoS attack using botnets now can no longer use the infrastructure they've developed that's been burnt because the vulnerability has been plugged, and they would have to go out and rebuild infrastructure within Russia to bypass the geofence, if that makes sense. So it's not entirely impossible, but it's capabilities that might be developed get shut down and you have to go back to the drawing board to develop access and all that kind of stuff.
But then a lot of what's going on with the Russian internet is not necessarily connected directly with what's going on in Ukraine. The military operations outside of the Russian borders or outside of the Russian geofence is vulnerable to attackers. I don't think Belarus, which is a willing participant in this, is as protected. And there are a lot of organizations and people outside of Russia, specifically in the Eastern Europe theater, are capable of creating quite a bit of havoc. And I know quite a few people in Poland. I know people in the Czech Republic. I know people in Albania, all of which are members of NATO, could be launching their own cyber attacks. Do you know much about the capabilities of those countries other than the US?
Yeah, at the governmental level, all the countries you mentioned obviously have very sophisticated capabilities. They've developed national cyber doctrine, strategy, and that kind of stuff. So what would worry me the most is if those NATO members are using their military cyber capabilities that they may have to attack Russian interests versus hacktivist groups using their capabilities to attack Russian infrastructure, because the use of the military cyber capabilities may be perceived as an actual military cyber attack rather than a loose collection of hacktivists or other organizations that are stepping in to really heed the call of the Ukrainian Prime Minister asking for the global hacking community to come and support them.
So for on a positive level, if the governments themselves are not sanctioning these attacks and it's coming from individuals throughout the world, it's probably better off for us if we do that. They can just say, well, we didn't sanction it. We're not going to stop it.
But that's a good question, actually. How would Russia be able to distinguish between whether it's a hacktivist attack or an official military attack?
Yeah, excellent question. So the on the one hand, what would worry me is if we're supporting or doing the wink, wink, nudge, we can't do anything about cyber because we don't know who the criminals are and that kind of stuff. It kind of goes against the entire political effort and setting global norms of responsible state behavior in cyberspace that we've been on the U.S. side and others have been doing within the UN group of governmental experts, the Paris call, and other kind of diplomatic normative frameworks that are being developed, because one of the goals of those efforts is to rein in non-state cyber activity in order to prevent potential destabilizing effects of another national government, assuming that an anonymous-like organization, an hacktivist organization, is not really a nation state. So by condemning those kinds of activities and not supporting them, that would be in our political diplomatic interest in order to like reinforce the norms that we've been articulating over the years of no hackbacks and really ensuring that nation states have full command and control of any kind of offensive cyber activity. That being said, because of the ambiguity in cyberspace, the US can deny all day long, or the Czech Republic or Albania or other countries can, their governments can deny all day long that they had nothing to do with a hacktivist organization that's operating on their territory attacking Russia. And Patrick, to your question, how would Putin or the Russian government know whether or not it's true? That's where the analytic attribution piece comes in. So we can assume that Russia's very sophisticated intelligence organizations would have ways to determine whether or not there is command and control of the hacktivist organizations by the government. So, you know, if there's a government official speaking on a cell phone, that packet's captured by Russian intel, and it's a command order telling a group, go attack this or that piece of cyber infrastructure in Russia, and the Russian intelligence services have that data and know for a fact that there is more to the story than just a hacktivist organization doing things on their own, that could start to change the calculus if the Russian government has that much fidelity on what's going on.
There's a couple of other questions I have, and it might be out of your purview, but there are two things popped up today. Number one, a U.S. senator proposed that any cyber attack originating in Russia on a NATO country could trigger the mutual defense clause in the NATO treaty, because it could be considered an act of war on one of the NATO countries, which could be problematic for Russia in that they can attack one or two countries at a time, but when 30 countries have decided to turn their cyber weapons on you, it can create quite a bit of a problem. I mean, just the anonymous hack of RT had 100 million devices. And when you think about it, Russian population is 142 million people. So essentially, they had two-thirds of the Russian population flooding the RT servers and shutting it down. So there's that possibility. The other possibility is that we're hearing a lot of protests going on in Russian cities right now. I just heard on Sky News that the leadership are encouraging people to build Molotov cocktails and throw them at the soldiers that are trying to put down the... So, I mean, there's going to be outright civil war in Russia. But Russia has a good army of cyber... of hackers themselves who are not officially part of the government. And I'm sure there are a few of them who are going to say, yeah, we don't like this either. So they'll be inside the geofence and they can create all kinds of havoc. You got any insight on that?
Yeah, I'll start with the NATO part. So that's one of the real risks here of what Putin might do against a NATO member in cyberspace, as well as what Russian hacker criminal organizations that have been conducting ransomware might do in cyberspace. So the challenge with NATO is, you know, they've clearly articulated that any kind of cyber activity will be investigated on a case-by-case basis. So if there's a DDoS attack against a NATO member that's originating in Russia, NATO as an alliance would have to deem that that is being considered an equivalent of a kinetic strike against against the alliance, and then they go from an Article 4 to an Article 5 kind of situation. So I'm assuming Putin and the Russian government are astute enough to kind of know where the red lines are and not go after critical infrastructure in NATO countries, not shut down the electrical grid as they have in the Ukraine, not do things that would rally the alliance together and maybe cause more cyber mischief at this point in time. Knowing that if they did shut down the power or cause any kind of physical kinetic disruption on a NATO member, that might trigger the alliance to enter the war, either in cyber or otherwise. Good case there is just the Estonian example, or even at the time, obviously NATO cyber policy was very immature, and it's obviously become more robust with official announcements and official policies and statements being made on cyber, but something to the level of a DDoS that crippled the nation of Estonia, that might be one of those gray zone areas, and seeing where NATO's political will would be to actually step in and call an event like the Estonian DDoSes, a cyber attack that would trigger Article 5 would be kind of that red line area where, sorry, gray / red line area where it's up to the political decisions of, do we want to invoke Article 4 then 5? For the alliance. On the Russian cyber community and what their responses might be, it's hard to tell. Obviously, there's not all Russian hackers agree with the Russian government and what they're doing, but I'd say the majority of them, because they become very wealthy through the Russian security services turning a blind eye to their ransomware attacks on the West, as well as the close relationship they have with the FSB and the GRU, they might be more useful or more likely be used as proxies in a cyber war. And they might even be used as proxies to go after infrastructure that people who are anti-Putin might be setting up. But the relationship between the hacker groups in Russia and the state is very close, almost indistinguishable at times.
Well, if the motivation for the hackers in Russia is financial, and the West has essentially shut down their access to their accounts, does that take away the incentive for them to support the Russian government? I mean, I've also heard that Putin met with a group of, I didn't hear, I actually read an article that Putin has met with a group of his oligarch friends, and they came out and said, yeah, we're not too worried about it because we're transferring all of our wealth into crypto. But even at that point, crypto is not well accepted worldwide. So you have to be able to convert that into currency in order to use it. So even those people that are supporting him outside the government may be losing their incentive to do so.
Yeah, and crypto is the key here, right? So for the Russian hackers who have been gaining all this wealth, they've been doing it in crypto. And crypto is the exchange of value on the dark web, where you go and buy your 0 days, you buy your infrastructure, your denial of service as a service, ransomware as a service capabilities. All that is bought on crypto, as well as other things. The challenge then is converting that crypto into fiat or just regular currency. And I'm just not familiar with what the Russian exchange ecosystem looks like. So here in the US, we obviously have Coinbase, we have other cryptocurrency exchanges where you can take ransomware funds, launder them, and then bring them into the normal banking system. If the hacker communities in Russia want to turn their crypto into fiat, and there's no robust ecosystem for them to go from crypto to ruble in Russia and then turn that into rubles in a bank account, that might be where some of these financial sanctions really hit their ability to.
Well, this would be a real good time to short the Russian ruble.
Yeah, and on the oligarchs, actually, I haven't dug deep into it, but CoinDesk, one of the cryptocurrency news sources that I follow, had a pretty good kind of overview on like why it's not going to be that easy for Russia to go to crypto to avoid sanctions and that kind of stuff.
Okay, I'm going to have to look that up. So to wrap this up, Patrick, do you have any other questions?
Actually, I do. Yeah, I mean, okay. Paolo, you just mentioned that apparently the Russians have shut down the power grid in the Ukraine using cyber attack. So are we seeing the first real cyber war, or at least partly cyber war, we've ever seen?
Yeah, I was referring to the Ukrainian blackouts years ago. And maybe something happened in the last hour or so. I haven't looked at the latest news updates on Ukraine, but what I was referring to was just the power blackouts that happened in 14, 15, 16, 17. So we've already seen Russia demonstrating their capability and intent to disrupt critical infrastructure in the Ukraine.
Actually, I can answer that. There was a report this morning out of the BBC. Okay. That there have been massive attacks on Ukrainian infrastructure, mm-hmm. but the Ukrainians have pushed it back. They've had massive but very short disruptions that they've been able to restore. So they learned a lot from that process of right. several years ago. Russia was obviously testing what the potential was for this particular moment, but the Ukrainians have learned from the process.
But it still looks like the cyber warfare is definitely part of the overall attack.
Yeah. And I think, Pano, you made the comment that Putin has said you're going to see warfare like you've never seen before. And many people I've heard in the general news media are saying that's nuclear war. Yeah, I don't think so. I think it's probably this level of cyber warfare that we're going to be seeing, because nuclear is the end of everything. You can recover from cyber.
I agree. Obviously, this could spin out of control and go nuclear in kind of a worst case, like pessimistic scenario. But my interpretation is similar to yours, Lou, that if they've been very specific over the past month or so, talking about military technical mm-hmm. responses. And then Putin clearly said as responses as you've never seen before. So cyber is definitely what I think he's alluding to. And what he means by you've never seen before is really what, at least in the United States, if the intended message is to the United States, is that we haven't seen mass disruptions, chaos on our shores. And that cyber provides him with the ability to kind of breach the two oceans that have been isolating us from the rest of the world and reach out and touch the homeland here in the United States. So yeah. That's been my interpretation. Obviously, the nuclear scenario, it's not just not likely, but it's, that doesn't mean the danger isn't there, if that makes sense.
So that's actually a good point. And I mean, as Lou just said, the nuclear option is the end of everything, but wouldn't it even be arguable that if Putin were to start a real cyber war, that could potentially be also looking at the state of some of the infrastructure. I heard that some of the infrastructure is not the sort of latest technology in the States, and over here in Germany it's very similar. So couldn't it be that Putin would actually be able to wreak more havoc than by going nuclear with a cyber attack?
I think so, but over the past month also, the Department of Homeland Security has been doing a really good job engaging with private industry, the electrical operators and others that operate the electrical grid here. And basically they've been doing this Shields Up campaign. And what that does is any kind of capability that Putin may have had prior to the start of the conflict may have been patched out by an operator just saying, oh, okay, I haven't updated my software in 3 months, I might as well do it now because DHS is telling me I need to prepare for the oncoming cyber war with Russia. So that might have helped at least create a little bit more difficulty for Russia to come out and touch us. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they wouldn't have other capabilities to come through cyber.
It just amazes me that there might be somebody out there that would say, oh, I haven't updated my software in 3 months. Oh. And in this day and time, people are still saying that, you know?
Yeah, it's scary sometimes.
I went and picked up my wife's phone and noticed she hadn't updated her iPhone for about, 6 months. And I went, okay, here we go.
Yeah, what I could see potentially triggering a nuclear war is if they come after our command and control systems and our nuclear infrastructure, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, cyber, and that could escalate quick.
How secure are those command and control centers right now?
It's a highly reliable, highly resilient system. But the question then is, you know, if you see somebody going in, if the Russians were hypothetically in the network, you'd kind of wonder, is this a first strike equivalent kind of thing? And do we need to pick up the red line and deconflict and that kind of stuff? That's what would worry me the most. So as long as they're not reaching out and touching our nuclear triad via cyber, even if there is disruption and chaos, that could raise to the level of an armed attack within the United States. Hopefully we keep it non-nuclear responses and that kind of stuff.
Okay.
But I think once we go over into the nuclear command and control systems, it's the risk of an exchange goes up significantly.
I don't know whether to be positive or negative about this right now.
Yeah, well, when you're in a war, it's kind of hard to be
positive.
I was positive until I saw Putin's speech on Tuesday, and then we just don't know where he's going to go with this.
Yeah. Well, Pano, thank you very much for this time. It's been very informative as normal, and I hope the good things happen and the bad things don't. So that is our special issue of Crucial Tech, interviewing Pano Yanokorgiorgos, the Clinical Associate Professor, Faculty Lead of Global Security, Conflict, and Cyber at New York University, and my partner in crime and co-founder of CyberProtectionMagazine.com, Patrick Buch. If you have any questions or concerns, you can contact us at CyberProtectionMagazine.com. That's CyberProtection-Magazine.com. And fill us in if you've got any ideas or have any other questions. Thanks for joining. This has been Crucial Tech, a Foot Washer Media production.